episode 602 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about Uncanny X-Men number one. This is the first in the weekly X-Men Disassembled storyline. It's from writers Ed Brisson, Matthew Rosenberg, Kelly Thompson. We have artist Mahmoud Azrar, colors by Rochelle Rosenberg, letters by Joe Caramagna, and then cover artists, there's quite a few variants. We have Linnell Francis Yu and Edward Delgado on the main cover, and then we have David Finch and Frank Darabonta, Justin Ponzer with Jim Chung, Scott Williams and Ryan Kennard, Carlos Pacheco. We've got Rachel Fontarez and Edward Delgado. We've got a Joe Quesada with Richard Eisenhoff, a Rob Liefeld and Romulo Fajardo Jr. There's also a Dave Cockrum tribute cover as well. So the little blurb inside the front cover, Disassembled Part 1, says, under the leadership of Catherine Kitty Pryde, the Xavier Institute for Mutant Education and Outreach has served as the latest training ground for young mutants, as well as the headquarters for the mutant peacekeepers known as the X-Men. Recently, Kitty was joined by longstanding X-Men Jean Grey, who spearheaded her own team of X-Men for the betterment of mutant and humankind alike. So, as much as I've tried to get back into the X-Men lately, I'm not all the way there yet. I read The Return of Jean Grey, Return of Phoenix. I've been reading the Extermination storyline. Been picking up on bits and pieces of what's been going on. Red Hunt for Wolverine, as well as currently reading Return of Wolverine. Read all the tie-ins, but I haven't been reading X-Men Gold or X-Men Blue or X-Men Red. So as much as I'm sort of caught up, I'm not there already. And when you're talking about a book like Uncanny X-Men, where all those other books have ended, all the different colored X-Men teams have all been rolled into this one. And so there are characters that I'm not that familiar with. I'm not sure who they are. I'm not sure where they come from, what their backgrounds are. So when I'm reading a story like this, I know that I am missing out on some information. And so there may be some of you listeners that are out there listening to this who've been following X-Men more closely than I have, and you may have a better idea of what's going on than I do. That being said, if you're more of a casual X-Men fan like I currently am, or you're not an X-Men fan at all, then you're probably going to be even more confused than I am, first of all. Second of all, if you decide that you're going to jump on this event, this Uncanny X-Men Disassembled Weekly event, then you know there may be some things that you'll learn in this podcast that help you. And also, I'm giving somewhat of a perspective of somebody who is kind of casual. Like, can you pick this up and read it? How much is there? Is it enjoyable if you're not, you know, fully invested and understand every one of these characters? So we do have a membership page, and it kind of starts with most well-known, I think, and kind of goes down from there. So we've got Jean Grey, Kitty Pryde, Lucas Bishop, Storm, X-23, Psylocke. And this is the Betsy Braddock Psylocke, which is so different from the Asian one we'd seen before. Nightcrawler, Jubilee, Iceman, Beast, Polaris, Cannonball, Archangel, North Star. And then we start with the ones that I'm not familiar with. We have Armor, we have Pixie, Rockslide, Oya, Anole, and Glob. And those ones I'm really not that familiar with. The other thing that we notice, and obviously we haven't gotten to the end of the Extermination event yet, but we always knew that was going to resolve the young X-Men part of the story. And the obvious one that's missing here is Cyclops. And I fully expect him to return in some way in this weekly event. Also, another one that's very conspicuous by his absence is North Star. And I mean, I have no clue. I don't know what – did I say North Star? I think I did say North Star. North Star is there. I meant Havoc. Havoc Alex Summers is very conspicuous in his absence. And again, I have no clue where he is. So just not sure. I'm pretty sure he's not dead. But again, I don't really know where he is. So the story starts off and we see Jamie Madrox, who he recently returned from the dead as well in the Multiple Man miniseries from Matthew Rosenberg. I think I read the first three or four issues. It was really confusing to me. And I think my plan was to revisit it after all the issues had come out and take my time and read it slowly and try to understand exactly what was going on. When you start talking about multiple, you know, a being that can divide himself or copy himself multiple times, it can get very confusing. And then you add in like time travel, dimensional travel, alternate realities to that, and it really gets confusing. And so, I think I just need to spend more time with it, but I never went back to it. So I'm not sure how much that miniseries leads into this one, because it does appear, based on just this first issue, that Multiple Man Jamie Madrox is going to play a pretty big role in this series. So, again, it starts off, he says, I need, well, where's Kitty Pryde? And we see Jean Grey, who seems very surprised to see Jamie Madrox. And his response is, Jean, we have to find Kitty. And before he can even finish his sentence, we see a couple of claws and a snicket from behind him, and the claws come out his forehead, and we see it's X-23, who stabbed him in the back of the head, and she's asking, Jean, are you all right? And Jean's not sure how to respond, and before she can, we see a lot of the other X-Men are being attacked by copies of Jamie as well, and they're all being wiped out by various X-Men. But meanwhile, every one of the Jamie copies is saying, where's Kitty Pryde? Where's Kitty Pryde? Where's Kitty Pryde? I mean, there are, it looks to be dozens of Jamies. And then all of a sudden, in the kitchen of the Xavier Institute, we see Jean Grey asking some of her teammates, where is Kitty Pryde? X-23 responds, she took some students to do a quick training before the press conference. And apparently what Jean saw was some kind of vision, because she says, I don't know, I saw something. And Laura says, well, something about Kitty? And Jean's like, not exactly. Again, she's not 100% sure what she saw, because Kurt even asked her, Nightcrawler. And she says, I'm not sure. So then we get a humorous moment with Laura using her claws as forks and Bobby calling her on it, saying, man, you don't know where those claws have been. They're not forks. And Bobby's like, are they even clean? And Laura says, well, imagine how clean they'd be if I carve you into an ice sculpture, Bobby. And Iceman's like, you know what? They're probably fine. Laura says, that's what I thought. So meanwhile, above Morrisville, North Carolina, we see Kitty with a lot of those younger X-Men, the ones who I named off at the end, who I didn't really recognize. I guess they're more of the trainees or the students. And we're not sure exactly where they're headed until Kitty says, we've got to fight the Mutant Liberation Front. They are attacking a pharmaceutical lab. We're not really sure why. And as they're getting ready to come in for a landing, Kitty reaches for the control panel to put down the landing gear. She phases right through it. And she talks about her powers going out of control. And all of a sudden, she literally falls through the floor of the plane. So unfortunately, she shorted out the plane when that happened. And even though the students appear to know how to fly it, the controls are unresponsive, and their plane actually crashes into the pharmaceutical lab. But one of the students is a teleporter, and they're imploring her right before the crash to teleport them to safety. But we don't know yet if they did make it to safety. Meanwhile, in Africa, in the middle of the desert, there's a huge rainstorm to the point where there's feet and feet of water. The Native African villagers are celebrating because it's water like they've never seen before, but Storm and Beast know how unnatural it is, and they're very worried because not only is it more water than the whole area has received in decades, which is unnatural enough, the water itself, even though it's only been there for hours, it has a lot more life in it than it should for something so new, right? It should take a long time for the proper bacteria to cultivate. And then with that bacteria that other animals can feed on, like fish and, you know, plants and insects and such, then that should happen. But it's already there. There's already three different types of fish, dozen species of plants, none of them native to the area. So it's extremely, extremely strange. And they're Beast takes a sample of the water and they're trying to figure out what's going on. Meanwhile, back at the site of the wreckage of the Blackbird, we see that the young mutants did survive. Some of them are not in the best shape. And the Mutant Liberation Front shows up and they're kind of disappointed. They're like, really? They sent the kiddies to take care of us. We don't even rate real X-Men. And it doesn't take long for the kids to start fighting the Mutant Liberation Front. And they actually kind of equip themselves pretty well, considering that they don't have as much experience as a lot of the members of the Mutant Liberation Front. So there's one mutant named Anole, I think it is. It's A-N-O-L-E. I'm not even sure what his power is. But he's still recovering from the crash. He's not 100%. He's not conscious. And Jamie Madrox shows up, slaps him, wake up. I want to know where Kitty Pryde is. And the kid mutant Anole responds, gone. Kitty vanished. And the duplicate of Jamie says, damn, I'm too late. I'm too late. And he goes running off. Meanwhile, some of the actual X-Men show up, Polaris, Nightcrawler, and X-23. They make pretty short work of the Mutant Liberation Front and turn their attention to the kids. Meanwhile, at City Hall in Manhattan, we find out just exactly what's going on as far as why the Mutant Liberation Front was attacking that pharmaceutical company. Apparently, that company has created a vaccine that will prevent the X gene from manifesting itself, and there will be no more new mutants. No more mutants will have their X gene manifest and gain powers. And so there's a senator named Ashton Allen who's talking about the fact that these X-Men are walking around. They're living, breathing weapons of mass destruction. And in a way, they're kind of victims, right? Because they don't have any control over their X-gene manifesting and them gaining powers. And the fact that they can now get a vaccine to prevent that from happening, it's what everybody should do. So he's kind of the pro-vaccine argument. And Kitty Pryde is supposed to be there as the head of the Xavier Institute to argue the con side of the vaccine to explain why they shouldn't use it. But as we saw earlier in the book, she disappeared. And so Jean feels like she's going to be the one that's going to have to give the speech. And as she heads up to the podium, instead, Jamie Madrox appears saying, Kitty Pryde is not here, but I'm glad to see all of you here today on such an important day. Auspicious, really. It's like it's meant to be or something. And needless to say, Jean and the rest of the X-Men in the crowd aren't really sure what to make of Jamie kind of storming the stage. And they certainly don't trust him at this stage after everything that's gone on over the past few years. And again, he's just so erratic, they're not sure what to think. Meanwhile, back at the school, the few of the younger X-Men trainees that were injured are being examined by the Beast. When one wakes up and says, hey, that was the guy that was there at the crash. Because on the TV monitor there in the sick bay, the press conference is on. And Beast is not happy to see Jamie at the podium either. And he gives somewhat a very, very erratic speech and doesn't really make much sense, talking about the differences between people and how they should be celebrating them. And really, mutants and humans are more alike than unalike, right? They're all really the same. Jean tells him to stop. He's making it look worse than possible with a telepathic message. But before anything else can happen, all of a sudden we do see dozens and dozens of Jamies kind of storming the crowd, saying, excuse me, coming through, this is important. Jean orders the X-Men to shut the duplicates down. So the X-Men do attack, but they're vastly outnumbered, and some of the Jamies get through, and they attempt to capture the senator. But he is teleported away before they can stop it. And once he disappears, the Jamies all say, we're too late, we couldn't stop it. And they all disappear. We also see that during the midst of the battle, Angel seemed to fly away. He seemed to have abandoned Psylocke while she was under attack. So clearly that's not normal behavior for Angel. And there's clearly more to be found out about that. As we turn the page, we get elsewhere. We see Kitty. She's tied to a chair. Her powers aren't working. In the chair right next to her, same room, we see the senator that just got teleported away and kidnapped, being held prisoner as well, saying, what do you people want from me? Kitty's like, Senator Allen? Does it really look like this is my idea, being that I'm tied up? And she mentions her power's not working. And the senator, Ashton Allen, says, well, if it wasn't you who took me, and before he could even finish the sentence from off panel, we get a shut your mouth. The girl does not answer to you. And we see that Apocalypse has been captured as well. And he says, our captors have earned the wrath of Apocalypse. Today, don't be so quick to join them, human. And we get to be continued. There's also, because this is a huge book, it's, well, the digital copy is 290 pages because it's a director's cut with penciled artwork, inked artwork, colored artwork, as well as some epilogues and a cover gallery. So I'm not sure exactly what you get when you buy the copy off the stands. I know it's a $9.99 book, and I know a lot of these epilogues are in there. Or these other parts. We got part one, a Bishop story, part two, a Jean Grey story, part three, an Armor and Anole story, and then the epilogue. And again, these are all events that I think they take place right before the events of the main story. So the epilogue here is called What Tomorrow Brings. There's parts one, two, and three, and an epilogue of an epilogue, I guess you'd say. And it even says, in the days leading up to the Multiple Man incident at City Hall, the X-Men remain committed to their mission of peaceful human and mutant coexistence in their own individual ways. So the Bishop story, and I'm just going to talk about these real briefly because there's not enough context to really understand what's going on. The Bishop story, he keeps getting warnings that his mutant, you know, his future mutant warning system of catastrophes, and it keeps going off more and more often, and he seems to be following somewhat of a trail of breadcrumbs to try to find out what's going on, and it eventually leads him to somebody named the Sugar Man. And again, I think this is a character that we've seen before in the X-Men, but not in the years that I read X-Men, and I'm not 100% sure who he is. And once he finds Sugarman, who seems to have an understanding of what's going on before Bishop can question him, he's attacked from behind, knocked out. When he wakes up, Sugarman is dead. In the second part of the epilogue, What Tomorrow Brings, it's Jean Grey in a coffee shop. And she's waiting for Storm to come and have a cup of coffee with her. And it's crowded. An older woman asks to sit at the table and share with her. And Jean's fine with that. And they end up starting to talk about the state of the world. And the woman is basically expressing her disappointment about how awful things currently are. And Jean's response is that you can't give up hope. But as she's talking, she turns away just momentarily and turns back, and the older woman is gone. And then Storm walks in, and they sit down and start to chat and kind of think with regret, I guess you'd say, about how they don't really have a chance to just sit down as friends and talk anymore. Everything's so busy. And right at that moment, someone falls through the skylight. And they're like, oh, we spoke too soon. And this guy seems to have some kind of superpowers. He fires energy blasts at Jean and Storm. And before they know it, other patrons in the coffee shop have powers as well. Their eyes are glowing. They're able to project energy beams or energy from their mouths. And when we turn the page, we get to part three. And we see Armor and Anole in the sewers. Apparently, there's been a monster reported in the sewers. And they're kind of forlornly talking about how they get all the crap jobs. Like, you know, full-fledged X-Men don't get sent into the sewers to look for probably something that's no more dangerous than an alligator. But what they actually come across is the Dark Beast. He has designs on disabling them so he can escape. He clearly has some idea of what's going on, more so than these kids do. So he is able to escape, and they follow him up the manhole to the street. When they get up there, they find themselves outside, close to where that coffee shop was, with a lot of X-Men battling civilians who are manifesting all sorts of powers. So Jean is trying to reach these civilians telepathically to kind of shut them down. The X-Men are trying to stop them as peacefully as they can without hurting them. And we even see the old woman who sat down with Jean in the coffee shop apparently get killed. And Jean screams out no when that happens. And as this woman apparently dies, all of the other citizens stop. And then their powers fade away, and they all seem to be confused. They're not sure what happened, why they got there, what's been going on. So meanwhile, Jean is cradling the old woman in her arms, and she's trying to understand what happened. And in the shadows behind her, we see the same old woman, like a doppelganger of her. But as she turns away, she appears to transform into a male with longish hair, and I'm just not sure who that could be. Like Mastermind came to mind, but I'm just not really sure who it is. So clearly there's something huge and malevolent going on. The fact that whoever this big bad is that's behind this civilian attack on the X-Men, probably the same person who was able to capture Kitty Pryde and this Senator Ashton Allen and Apocalypse. I mean, anybody that can capture and hold Apocalypse is gonna be really powerful. So my guess is, my thought is, it's gonna be somebody new, a new villain that we haven't seen before, as this trio of writers come up with a new big bad for the X-Men to fight, which is interesting, right? Because we have the new big bad over in the pages of Wolverine that Charles Soule has created with Sotiera and the woman behind Persephone, I think her name is. So clearly we're bringing a lot of new villains into the X universe, and we know that this Uncanny X-Men event is going to spawn all kinds of future stories. We know the Uncanny title is going to continue, but there's going to be somewhat of an Agent of Apocalypse-like event that's going to last for at least 1 month. We know there's a lot of other titles coming. It seems like we've seen covers to a ton of stuff with some kind of an X-Men Messiah, and it just seems like this is a very X-Men-heavy time in the Marvel Universe. There's a few other titles that seem to be doing really well. I think Doctor Strange title's doing okay. Iron Man seems to be doing really well. Immortal Hulk is flying off the shelves. Fantastic Four are back. Spider-Man's doing better than it has in a long time with Nick Spencer on it. But there's only one Avengers title right now, and there's not a lot of other Avengers stuff going on. It's just that one title that's coming out more frequently than it previously did. I would want the same for X-Men, but I'm just not sure how it's all going to shake out. I mean, there was quite a few years there where X-Men were starting to take a back seat to a lot of the other titles and properties, especially Inhumans. A lot of people believe it has to do with the Marvel Cinematic Universe not having control over the X-Men for film and TV, and wanting to not help Fox promote them by having the spotlight on them. But it seems like it's swung back around. The pendulum has swung back, and now we're getting a lot of X-Men content from some really, really great writers like Matt Rosenberg and Ed Brisson and Kelly Thompson. So the other thing that's going to be interesting to see is obviously Mahmoud Asrar is not going to be able to draw all the issues of a weekly book. So I hope that the other artists they get, their styles are similar to what Asrar's are. That way it's not too jolting, especially if you plan on picking it up in trade. So a lot of action in this issue. I do feel like you could pick this up without having a huge knowledge of exactly what's been going on in the X-Men universe. And there's enough here that it's still enjoyable. And you kind of just have to dive in and keep reading, and what you need to know will be explained to you. Like, again, I think clearly there's something going on with Madrox. There may be information in his recent miniseries that kind of helps explain it. As far as the characters that I don't know, those young X-Men, I think that's probably the X-Men Gold Team, the Kitty Pryde. I think that's the one that she runs. So that's probably where a lot of that comes in. So again, I don't think it's imperative that you are completely caught up on X-Men, but you do want to have at least a working understanding of who these characters are. And I would definitely recommend picking up the Extermination storyline, because that's a little easier to get into than this, I think. And it does kind of lead into this, which I'm kind of surprised that they didn't plan on finishing Extermination before this started, but they haven't given any spoilers away. You know, it's not like they've said, oh, remember the young X-Men, they disappeared or they were killed or whatever. They're not even mentioned at all. So clearly that's resolved in the final issue of that series. So a lot of X-Men stuff coming out. I'm trying to stay on top of it, trying to just kind of jump on the bandwagon and read everything X-Men I can going forward, so I can kind of have a better understanding of where we are. Really feeling the X-Men fever these days, and still planning on starting the X-Men chronology at some point too, just trying to find a good time to get a few recorded and in the can, so we make sure we don't miss any episodes for you. So all in all, recommendation is to go ahead and pick up X-Men Disassembled. I think it's going to be a wild ride, and it's really going to shape the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe going forward. That being said, if you don't want to spend $10 on issue one, and then it's probably $4 a piece every week on the regular title, I'm sure they'll be coming out in trade, just like the Batman Eternal storyline did over at DC a few years ago. So you can always wait if you want. You just probably don't want to listen to our Tuesday Uncanny X-Men spotlights, because they're going to be a little spoiler heavy on what actually happens in the story. So, all right, I think that's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank everybody for joining. Don't forget to tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, be sure and check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.